So it's important to recognize that at that stage, it can be both good and bad. And then if you go around a little bit over to stage two, to the informed pessimism, again, it's very similar. At informed pessimism, it can be very good. It can also be very bad. When you're at informed pessimism, that's exactly when you should be doing your planning. It's exactly when you should be doing your strategic planning and strategic thinking and your budgeting, because you're going to be more realistic. If you're buying advertising, you don't want to be buying advertising when you're manic and uninformed. You want to be buying advertising when you're a little bit pessimistic, when you have more information, because then you're going to be making calculated decisions. It's impossible to make a calculated decision when you're manic and at that uninformed optimism phase. Now, when you're at informed pessimism, you also don't want to do some certain things. You don't want to be talking to the media. You don't want to be doing speaking events. Now, if you're in that more cautiously optimistic phase, you probably don't want to be standing talking to the media at that point, because you're not going to get them excited. They'll find little chinks in your armor. Yesterday, I went and had lunch with a woman who's running for our politics. She's running for the Canadian equivalent of a governor. And in our talk, she was talking about the fact that, well, I may not win this first round, but I'm going to try really hard. And I was like, well, wait a second. Don't ever say that again. Like, how could you possibly be running for this position and sit in some, and she was trying to get me to do some fundraising for her. Like, how are you going to build my confidence in you if you're telling me that you're kind of nervous? I don't want to know you're kind of nervous. And that unfortunately is what an entrepreneur has to bear. That, you know, as entrepreneurs, anybody who's on this call, we can't sit in front of our employees and tell them that we're kind of nervous. We can't sit in front of our employees and say we're scared or that we're lacking a little bit of confidence. We need to do that with our groups, you know, our forums that we get involved with, or our deep friends who are confidants, or other entrepreneurs that we can talk to, or our mentors or coaches. Those are people you can open up to. But you can't do that with your employees. Your employees need to feel that unwavering trust. You know, that's one of the things that is so strong with Steve Jobs, is he literally believes he can change the world. And he never, ever wavers from that. He believes that he'll develop and build these insanely great products, and everyone around him believes them. If Steve Jobs stopped believing, Apple would no longer be successful.
Okay, well, let me stop you right there for one sec, Cameron, and get a little clarification then, because, all right, if we're in that informed optimistic stage, you know, stage two, informed pessimism, and we're still talking to our employees and still trying to motivate them, how do we conjure up that, I guess, that unbridled enthusiasm or confidence?
Red Bull and espresso. it sounds funny, but whenever I do even calls like this, I go through my little checklist. Have I gone to the washroom? Yep. Did I get my water? Yep. Do I need espresso? And I actually did that check just before our call, and I'm like, nope, I'm already manic. I don't need espresso. We used to keep Red Bull in our offices, and Brian and I would routinely grab a glass of it if we needed it. You know, we'd get exercise. We'd go for a run, but we would just recognize where our mood was, and we'd try to bring it up if we needed to a little bit.
Okay, because obviously, you know, we can't wait to be in stage one to talk to the media or recruit employees or anything like that, so you got to almost force yourself into that stage a little bit.
Yeah, you've got to force yourself into it, and you'll see athletes do that, where they'll kind of pump themselves up and get themselves all jazzed up and then pop out into a group, or athletes before a race or before, you know, an Olympic event, they'll have their headphones on and they'll listen to some song that'll just pump them up and get their energy going. What you're doing there is trying to artificially get the mania, artificially get the energy going, because you know you want to leverage that energy. So this is partially, you want to get yourself in that stage. It's also partially to understand when you're in that stage, how do you avoid it or how do you leverage it?
All right, so that's stage two. Is there anything else in there, or should we move on to stage three?
Yeah, not really. So from stage two, the key point to remember is you're getting a little bit nervous, you're getting a little bit pessimistic. As you're gaining information, sometimes stress can take over and start bringing you down that curve. And you'll start feeling things. I went to the doctor about 8-9 years ago, and when I was talking to the doctor, he asked me how things were going, and I said, it's pretty good. Everything's good. I've got this little, I don't know what it is, this taste in the back of my neck. It feels like I can taste tin foil. It feels like I'm tasting or chewing on aluminum foil. And he kind of looked at me and went, really? I'm like, yeah, you know how if you like pop a piece of gum in your mouth and you forgot to take the tinfoil wrapper off? I said, that's what I can kind of taste in the back. He's like, okay. And he goes, what's happening in your life? I started explaining all these different events that were happening. My mom was sick with cancer, and I'd just quit my job, and I'd moving up to Canada, and my wife was pregnant, and we just bought a house. And I think I had 8 of the 10 most stressful events happening simultaneously. And he kind of looked at me, and he went, wow. He said, you've got a lot of stress going on in your life. I was like, no, nothing. I said, I'm good. I'm handling it all. I said, other than this weird metallic taste in the back of my neck. He said, yeah, but he said, do you know that that metallic taste is actually a chemical secretion induced by stress? He said, you're actually at the stage where you're tasting stress. That's, I actually was at 490 out of 500 points. And if you hit 150 points, you have a, I think it's a 90% chance of a heart attack. I was so far past that zone, I was physically tasting a chemical secretion. So what I'm trying to get people to understand now is, when you're sliding down the curve, start to recognize it. It's okay, it's natural, but then you need to try to work through it. And the one way you need to work through it is not hide out, not be by yourself. That's when it starts to get a little bit worse. You need to open up a little bit to your closest confidant. You need to turn to some mentors. You need to turn to your priest or your rabbi, whatever, and start thinking about explaining to them how you're feeling. Ask yourself, what are the things that you do when you're at those most stressful periods? Make a list together, because you're not going to be thinking clearly when you're that stressed. Make a list now when you're feeling good of all the things you do to get through stressful times. Maybe it's go for a walk or go for a run. Maybe it's get some exercise. Maybe it's go fly fishing. Maybe it's go cycling. Maybe it's have a drink. Have one drink, not 8 drinks. What are some of the things you do?
Well, the drinking certainly is one of them, but usually it doesn't turn into 8, but it doesn't end with 1. But the more productive actually has been journal writing.
Perfect.
And it's actually, there's a great book that I just read. I don't know if you're still on your business book diet or not, but it's called 59 Seconds, and by its professor Richard Weissman out of the UK. And I've been journaling on and off for a long time, actually. And in here, he's done a bunch of research on only peer-reviewed scientific studies. And in there, journal writing was right up there on how to deal with how to make you happier, essentially. And there's a couple different things. Thinking about what you're actually grateful for was one of them. So writing down everything you're grateful for. So that's something that I've done every time that I've come across times of turmoil, is literally sitting down and writing down everything that I'm grateful for. And it starts with, you know, even little things like a roof over your head and, you know, the kids that love you regardless and so on and so forth. And then thinking about the progress that you've made instead of thinking about all the crap that you haven't done or what you haven't accomplished, which only leads to a spiral of more impending doom. Thinking about where you've come from and all your, even just progress instead of perfection. And that's been really, really powerful, just journaling that. And then even just journaling how you're feeling, believe it or not. And he talks about this in here in a peer-reviewed study, which writing actually gives you a storyline. And instead of us kind of going through it in our own heads, which becomes a big jumbled mess and then gets pushed down, I can't have a negative thought, so you push it down and you ignore it or whatever the case is. But when you journal about something, it creates a storyline, which is a beginning, middle, and end, and it helps you process it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a huge point. I did a journal about 2.5 years ago, right after I left 1-800-GOT-JUNK and just before I started Backpocket COO. And every day for 20 minutes for a period of 3 months, I just lay in my hammock and wrote notes. And part of it was just flushing stuff out. It was very powerful. Another thing that you touched on is a concept that I learned at a program called Strategic Coach, and I think you're now taking this this program as well, Yannick.
Yep.
And they talked about getting caught in the gap. And the gap being that as entrepreneurs, we're always setting goals for ourselves, which is awesome, and we should. But we're always focusing on the future. And the trap that we can get caught in, or the gap that we can get caught in, is that we only are happy when we get to our goal. Well, the reality is, by the time we get to our goal, we've already set new goals for the next quarter or the next year. So So unless we look in the rearview mirror once in a while and see how far we've just come, we're never actually going to be happy, because we're going to be continually stretching for that next goal. We're going to be continually caught in that gap. And as an entrepreneur, one of the things they taught us was at the end of every week, just write a list of all the things that you got accomplished this past week that was good. Just quickly take 5 minutes at the end of the week and write down the stuff that you got done that you're happy about. And those are the kinds of things that are going to help you to get through this crisis of meaning, because they're going to help remove a little bit of the stress of the day-to-day of being an entrepreneur. So that's huge stuff for sure. One of the keys that we talked to our franchisees in all the franchising companies I've helped build was it's really important to communicate to other franchisees how you're feeling. It's okay to phone them up and say, I feel like I'm going towards this crisis of meaning stage. The key is don't wait until you get there. If you wait until you get to that crisis of meaning stage, what ends up happening is that you end up, it's too late for anybody to really help you. You need to know the feeling that you're having and start communicating that feeling to others and realize that every entrepreneur is going through the same roller coaster ride that you're going through as well. You are actually normal. And that was really liberating for me to understand that so many years ago, because it gave me the power to just be able to communicate where I was and get help before I really needed it.
And then so we're still in this informed pessimism stage, which is the downward part of our roller coaster. But we always hit the crisis of meaning, is that correct?
Yeah, you're going to always hit a crisis of meaning stage in your business. And one of the things that happens when you get there is that you're really not able to do much. You know, you're not able to get excited or plan or do work or motivate employees. And at times you'll find that the only thing you can really do is clean your filing cabinet. Well, you know what? Do it. Like, clean your filing cabinet. Clean your drawers. Throw stuff out. Purge. Because what ends up happening is a little bit of momentum starts to happen. Just even by purging and cleaning and throwing stuff out, you start feeling better because you have more space and cleanliness around you. There's actually proof around that if you're working in an environment that's clean and clutter-free, you're actually going to be less stressful than working in one that is full of clutter. There was a period about 6 or 7 years ago, I think it was around 2003, with 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and Brian was the founder and CEO, and I was the chief operating officer. We were extraordinarily stressed. We were very, very stressed on the business and really had no idea how we were going to build what we were trying to build, but we knew we were going to stay focused on it. And one day we kind of looked at each other and just said, you know, I'm not capable of doing anything today, and neither was Brian. And we knew we couldn't just leave the office. So we went to the storage room, and we started to clean it. And we spent about 5 hours that day cleaning the storage room. So here was the CEO and COO. At the time, we had about 140 employees at our head office and probably 1,000 employees system-wide. And we were cleaning a storage room together. We were doing that because it was the only thing we could feel good about doing. Well, when we were done, we had this immense feeling of satisfaction that allowed us to start turning around the corner the next day. And then also, don't worry about the guilt that you feel for taking some time off. You know, if you're hitting or feeling like you're hitting that burnout stage, go take some time off. Go get some exercise. Go relax. Take a vacation. Take a Friday off, and don't feel guilty about it, because no one is praising you when you're working your 120-hour weeks. So don't feel guilty about when you take some time off. We have to, as entrepreneurs, understand that we're under more stress and more workload than anybody else in the organization are, and we're allowed to take the time off. I think a lot of us in our kind of 30s, 40s, and 50s as entrepreneurs really have a built-in guilt feeling. And part of it, I think, was our parents, the way we were raised, was we were always told to work hard. I don't think it's about work hard anymore. I think it's about work smart. You know, there's an element of working hard, but it's more about working smart. And part of working smart is knowing it's time to recharge your batteries and not feel that you can go at 100 miles an hour every single second of the day. So it's okay to burn out. It's okay to take the time off. It's okay to kick back and relax so that when you're ready to go 100 miles an hour again, you have a fully recharged battery allowing you to do that.
Yeah, and then some of the other things that I know you've talked about before about what not to do, one of them is stop trying to learn more. Stop trying to cram more business books and magazines into your head.
Yeah. You mentioned that just just a while ago on the call, you asked if I was still on my business book diet. So when Yannick and I first met about 2 years ago, I decided that it was time for me to take a break from reading business books. And I decided at the time to take a one-year break, and I wasn't going to read a single business book for 12 months. And it was really powerful. I did a lot of reading. I read a lot of great books, read a lot for fun. But I just decided that what was happening with all these business books was they were overwhelming me with two things. Every time I read a book, it gave me a list of things that I should be doing for my business that I wasn't doing already. And the second thing it did is it beat me up emotionally and made me feel like I wasn't doing as good a job as I could be doing. So by taking a break and kind of stopping the insanity for a year, it allowed my brain to relax. And it felt so good that at the end of 12 months, I decided to go for a second 12 months. And this is not because I feel like I know it all, far from it. It was just because I needed to just take a break. So while I was building the rest of my business and executing on what I knew I needed to do, I decided to take a break from getting stressed out by reading what all these experts were telling me I should be doing as well. So I went 2 years without a single business book, and it was fantastic. And now what I've decided to do is I'll read five fun books and then one business book. And then five fun books and one business book. So I'm going to edge back into it slowly. And but yeah, it's been great to have that break as well. Just not feeling guilty about it.